Welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace, Chris in the live inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215, home of the No time to waste today, Chris Chapman. No time to waste. We have a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final. No matter what, the Stanley Cup will come out tonight. The Stanley Cup will be won by either the Edmonton Oilers or the Florida Panthers. Edmonton has stormed all the way back from a 3-0 series deficit to force a Game 7. And the Florida Panthers have to be wondering what it is they have to do to finally win another game in this series. They have had three closeout chances, and they have failed each time. And now it sets up a do-or-die Game 7. That's coming at you in just about 90 minutes or so. Puck drop a little after 5:20 p.m. So we are going to get you set up for Game number 7. We've got burning questions coming up in hour number 2. Burning questions that I have, that Chapman has for Game 7, what we kind of expect to happen in Game 7. We're also going to hit one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League in hour number 2 as well. We're going to talk about the offside review that loomed quite large in Game 6 and whether or not the NHL got it right. Also, whether or not this is the spirit of the rule when it comes to offside review, and what, if anything, we would change about that process entirely. But to start off, as we have done after every single game of the Stanley Cup Final, really as we've done after every single game over the last couple of series, we're going to get into great observations. Because I've got a few really good observations coming out of Game 6. Chapman, I'm sure you have yours as well. So we're going to do what everybody knows. Great observations brought to you by none other than Leon Draisaitl of the Edmonton Oilers. Leon has a chance later on today to win his first ever Stanley Cup. So first great observation from me. I'm going to dig into this one. The Edmonton Oilers, frankly, are a really good, mentally tough, deep hockey team. And it's funny because for so long on this show, for so long, I have had the stance that the Oilers need something more. For so long, I talked about how the Oilers needed more depth. For so long, I talked about how the Oilers needed better defense, how the Oilers needed a stronger goaltender than Stuart Skinner, how, yes, it's great to have the two best players in the world. Yes, it's great to have McDavid and Draisaitl when they are going off, when they are doing amazing things. But when you get to a point where you can shut those two guys down, there's nothing else beyond them for the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah, Zach Hyman's important. Yeah, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is important. But I kind of lump those guys in with Draisaitl and McDavid. And when you're talking about just four guys, it doesn't equate to, generally speaking, championship hockey. But yet, the Oilers are here. And yet, the Oilers are just 60 minutes away from winning a championship. And they got to Game 7 without any points in Game 6 from Connor McDavid. That's right, the Warren Fogles of the world. They showed up. The Ryan McLeods, the Philip Brobergs, they showed up. The Adam Henriques have showed up for the Oilers in this series. It has been largely about McDavid and the 8 points in two games that he put up to stave off elimination for the Oilers. Yes, McDavid is likely the Conn Smythe winner regardless of the outcome of tonight's game. But make no mistake about it, the Edmonton Oilers are here. They are on the cusp of one of the greatest comebacks in NHL history because McDavid has been backed up by the likes of Fogle and Broberg and McLeod and Janmark and Henrique and on and on and on and on. Lest we forget what Stuart Skinner's been able to do. I mean, you're just talking about one of the greatest goaltending performances in a postseason when it matters the most in games 4 through 7. And I'm going to give you more numbers later on in the show to support that. But the fact of the matter is we have to change the way that we view the Edmonton Oilers. I had to do this after the Oilers beat Dallas in the Western Conference Final. I had to come on here and say that I was wrong about the Edmonton Oilers. And all that they have done in this Stanley Cup Final is prove I was right about how wrong I was about this team. Great observation. The Edmonton Oilers are a great hockey team.
Great observation.
All right, Ryan. Well, I hate to steal your thunder a little bit, because you alluded to it a little bit in what you were saying there. But for many years, we've been calling Sergei Bobrovsky Big Game Bob. Well, the guy on the other side of the net is Big Game Stu, because you alluded to how good Stuart Skinner has been in this postseason. It's hard to imagine that he was benched. And since then, how good he has been. But what I want to focus on with Stuart Skinner is how good Stuart Skinner has been in games 4 through 7 of these Stanley Cup playoffs. I know you have the numbers in front of you, because you started to say that you were going to give us those numbers later. Well, I have those numbers for you. And this is why the real big game goalie is the guy who's playing in Edmonton and not the guy who calls Sunrise his home. It's Stuart Skinner. His numbers in this postseason in games 4 through 7, he's 10-0. 10-0.
Yeah.
Goals against average, 1.40 goals against. His save percentage, 0.943. This is like Vasilevsky-esque type numbers that we're getting from Stuart Skinner in what would traditionally be called closeout games. He was amazing in the closeout game against the Vancouver Canucks. He was really good in the closeout game against Dallas Stars. Don't even get me started on what he's done, what he did to LA in their closeout game. And all he's done in this series is stave off elimination 3 straight times, outplaying Big Game Bob in the process. And you could make the case that throughout the entirety of the series, he's been the better goalie, despite the fact that in the first 8 periods of this Stanley Cup Final, Sergei Bobrovsky stopped 78 of 80 shots. Since then, he has allowed 14 goals on 64 shots. There's only one big game goalie in this series, and my great observation is that Stuart Skinner is, in fact, the big game goalie in this Stanley Cup Final.
Great observation.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I like that one, Chapman. Well done. So, great observation number two for me happens to deal with Leon Draisaitl. So, it's great. It's a great thing that he's supporting the show and sponsoring the segment, as he often does. Leon Draisaitl's on the cusp of one, man. I'm telling you right now, like, listen, we kind of bandied about last week going into game 6. You kind of need a big moment or a big game from Leon. And what does he do? He delivers. Now, it wasn't top to bottom, just an elite performance from Leon, but he sets the tone for this team by making the play and setting up the goal for Warren Fogle. They go ahead early on in the first period. They're in Edmonton. The crowd goes wild. You got the Florida Panthers sitting there. They can't generate anything. They can't forecheck to save their lives. And all of a sudden, they have to come from behind again. It was a big moment, and Draisaitl delivered. And I look at this and I say to myself, okay, he's clearly hampered. He's dealing with something. I don't know what it is. I don't know the extent of it, but he hasn't looked like himself for large stretches of games. But you didn't overtax McDavid or Draisaitl. It was a pretty much a no-doubter in game number 6. So you were able to rest, conserve your big guns for this moment where there's no tomorrow. Given the fact that this is game 7, given the fact that the prize at the end of tonight is the Stanley Cup. I'm expecting the best game from Leon that we have seen so far in the Stanley Cup final. And if that happens, there's not a counter on the other side for the Florida Panthers, right? Like, we have seen the best game out of Matthew Tkachuk. We have seen some pretty good games out of Sasha Barkov. But if all of a sudden Leon Draisaitl goes off, who's going to answer that bell on the other side for Florida? Especially when you consider that all these things that I'm saying about Leon are also true about Connor. I'm just penciling in a brilliant performance from Connor McDavid, but I am also attaching to this a great transcendent performance from Leon Draisaitl, because you know what? You got time to rest after. You know what? You have the ability to recuperate after, and it'll be a lot easier to rest and recover if you've got the Stanley Cup alongside of you. So I am expecting, my great observation is he started in game six, but it will be fully articulated and fully realized. The best game from Leon Draisaitl in the Stanley Cup final, it's coming tonight in game seven.
Great observation.
Yeah, that's a good one. You have to think he's on the precipice of doing something good tonight. My second one, and I'm a little bitter about this, but I'm a big what's the word? I observe body language, and the Florida Panthers' body language after game six was that of a team that realizes they lost the series. All their heads were down. Facial expressions were on the verge of tears. This team should have been celebrating at this point. They should be in week two of their Stanley Cup celebration. Instead, they're going to watch another team who was once down 3-0 in the series celebrate on their ice tonight. I don't need to go into too much detail with this one, Ryan. It's pretty quick. I observe the Florida Panthers' body language after game six. It wasn't there in game five. It wasn't there in game four. It was there Friday night. This team is done. They know they're done. And I would not be shocked if they get rolled tonight. My observation is the Florida Panthers have already lost game seven without even stepping on the ice.
Great observation.
Wow. Wow. So you think this is a no-doubter for Edmonton tonight, huh?
I think Edmonton wins pretty easily. I kept saying all along, Florida's okay. They're the best team. They're the better team in the series. They've got the better coach. They've got the better goalie. I was wrong about all of that. I was wrong about all of it. And I've been wrong since game four, because this team, that body language coming off the ice, they know that there's nothing they can do. They're going to lose this game tonight. And you could see it on their faces.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting because I have said, and I maintain going into game six, that if the Florida Panthers lost game six, I didn't see them having much of a chance here in game seven tonight. And I still believe that. So I'm with you. Well, and that ties into my next great observation. Go ahead.
I'll give you this. History is on the side of the Edmonton Oilers, because the last three teams in the NHL that have come from three games down to win a series have won game seven on home ice or on the road. So Edmonton has that on their side. Although, if you want to look for a glimmer of hope for Florida, Paul Maurice is 4-0 in game sevens.
Hold on. One of those teams, if I'm remembering correctly, were the Philadelphia Flyers, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and what was funny about that, if I'm remembering this correctly, and I could be completely wrong here, but I don't think that I am. The Philadelphia Flyers, I want to say in Game 7, went down 3-0 in the game and then came back to win. So they were playing Boston.
Yes.
And I'm fairly certain that Boston had a 3-0 lead in game seven after having a 3-0 lead in the series. and they blew not just a 3-0 series lead, but a 3-0 lead in Game 7 to lose Game 7, and then to complete that comeback for Philadelphia. So let's hope for the Panthers' sake and Panthers fans' sakes that doesn't happen again here tonight with the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. Okay, so tying into great observation number 3 for me, and this one pisses me off. Like, I'm not going to lie. This one makes me mad. This series is making me believe in momentum, and I hate that. Like, listen, if you believe in momentum, totally fine. Momentum inside of a game, I'm with you. Like, you can feel it. It's palpable. You can understand that. Inside of games, I'm all about the momentum. You can have momentum shifts, momentum swings, all of those things. And it's not just arbitrary. It's not these intangibles that you can't quantify. It's real. It happens in front of you. But part of what makes hockey so interesting, part of what I love so much about covering professional athletes, is that all of these guys have the ability to compartmentalize and put things away. So as much as you want to believe that momentum carries over from game to game, I don't buy that. I've never bought that until now, because everything has shifted in this series. You look at the first 3 games. The Florida Panthers outscore the Edmonton Oilers 11-4. Edmonton can't score on the power play. They can't score at 5-on-5. They can't get contributions from McDavid and Dreisaitl. Like, the top of their lineup is missing. Sergei Bobrovsky's putting up all-time numbers. And the last 3 games have shifted completely. And the Florida Panthers do not look like a team that knows how to deal with it at all. And the only thing that I can keep coming back to is momentum. The only thing that I can keep coming back to is the Florida Panthers can't deal with it because they are falling under the crushing weight of a boulder that is moving downhill and beating them with momentum. That's what the Edmonton Oilers have been over the last 3 games. So in a very real way, and I hate it, this series, more than any series I've ever watched in my entire life, makes me believe that game-to-game momentum actually does exist.
Great observation.
Yeah, I've always been a believer in that momentum, but I think some things make you believe a little more than others. For me, this is, and it's not too dissimilar from my second observation, but the Edmonton Oilers have sucked the soul out of the Florida Panthers. I don't think it's like Mortal Kombat when that, I don't remember who the character was, and he would take the soul of his opponent before he obliterated him. But I don't think we realized at the time how important those 8 goals were in Game 4. I think we just chalked it up to, you know what, Florida just was out there going through the motions. They know they've got this on home in Game 5. They'll be fine. No, that broke the psyche, and it broke the spirit of the Florida Panthers. They have they're missing their swagger. You know, this was a team that had guys like Sam Bennett throwing his weight around. They had guys like Nick Cousins, who I know he hasn't played a ton in the series, but a guy who would go out there and you know, we know what Alec Martinez said of him, about him being a disturber. But that 8-1 win completely demoralized, completely crushed, and it sucked the life out of the Panthers. They have not been the same since that second period when Edmonton blew that game wide open, because that was a fairly close game going into the second period. Florida had to feel like, all right, we hit a post. Skinner made a big save. Otherwise, we're happy with the way we played. Something changed in the locker room between that first and second period, and the Oilers absolutely opened up a can on the Florida Panthers, one that they have not since recovered from, one that they're not going to recover from. I didn't think much of it at the time. But when you go back to that game and you look at the way Edmonton just was relentless, and they didn't care if they put up 8 goals, you know, you have to think, This is a closeout game. You get beat 8-1, you're going to come out in game five on fire. That didn't happen. It didn't happen. You gave up a shorthanded goal, and it completely fell apart again. That 8-1 win was not only the series changer, but it completely changed everything about these two teams. The Edmonton Oilers felt at that point that they were unbeatable, and Florida had that little shadow of doubt that, you know what, maybe, just maybe, these guys have the ability to beat us and do whatever they want against us, because that's what Edmonton did in that series or in that game. My observation is that the Edmonton Oilers have sucked the soul out of the Florida Panthers, and they will completely crush it tonight.
Great observation.
You're giving the Florida Panthers no chance tonight.
They're done. They're done. None. They're going to get smoked.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This might prove your point here. My last great observation. The Edmonton Oilers are most comfortable when they have their backs against the wall. Here's the stats on Edmonton in terms of elimination games, where they can be eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs. This will be their sixth elimination game. They are, to this point, 5-0 in elimination games. They have outscored their opponents 26-8 in those games. 26-8 in five elimination games. In five games where if Edmonton slips up, if they falter, if they stumble in any way, their season is over, and it is over well before they have lived up to their expectation. And yet, they continue to play. But here's the thing that I think is most interesting. On the backs of those elimination games that they have had to play, and they have played a lot of them because they have put themselves in holes early in series, and then they've had to battle back in spectacular ways. Their first opportunity to close out LA, they closed them out. Their first opportunity to close out the Vancouver Canucks, they closed them out. Their first opportunity to close out the Dallas Stars, what did they do? They closed them out. So not only are the Edmonton Oilers great when their backs are against a wall, not only are the Edmonton Oilers great when they are facing elimination, but they have the killer instinct. The first chance they get to end a series, they do it. And so it speaks to the belief in the room that these guys have. One, they're never out of a series. It doesn't matter. If you beat them three times, good luck getting the fourth. Good luck. 28-6. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. The numbers for the Oilers are insane in these closeout games. And yet they continue to do it. They continue to go to the well. They continue to have those moments where they shine. They continue to get great goaltending from Stuart Skinner. They continue to get transcendent performances from Connor McDavid and their depth. They are just a team that exudes confidence when everybody believes they're done. No one believed that they would last more than a game or two when this series went 3-0 in favor of the Florida Panthers. And yet, the more people doubt them, the more unbeatable they look. I don't understand it. I can't quantify it outside of a simple, simple fact. The Edmonton Oilers live to prove people wrong the minute they're written off. And that's been their story all season long.
Great observation.
All right, my last one is more of a prediction as opposed to an observation. But when this series took that turn, I had mentioned that I don't think the Florida Panthers will ever recover from blowing a 3-0 series lead and losing a Stanley Cup final. My thoughts were validated as I was scouring social media following game six on Friday. Now, I understand it's random fans and you know, fans can sometimes be over dramatic, or they can, you know, it's short for fanatic. So there's some fanatical devotion to the Florida Panthers. But first off, I will say I feel terrible for the diehard Florida Panther fans who have been there through the really dark times of this franchise, you know, through the years where they were drawing, you know, 7,000-8,000 a night to a regular season game, under 1,000 to a preseason game. Like, my heart breaks for those fans, because those fans deserve it more than anyone, to have sat through the garbage that that team rolled out year in, year out for about 10 years. I feel bad for Paul Maurice, because he's a guy who's coached a ton of games in this league, and he was on the cusp of winning the ultimate prize, and he's going to watch it slip through his fingers. But my validations were, or my thoughts were validated on Friday night when I saw loads and loads of Florida Panther fans saying, I just don't know how I ever come back to watching sports again after this. To be so close last year and lose, to go back again this year and be up 3-0 and to lose. I know, as a guy who roots for some really crappy franchises, I'm a New York Jets fan. I've never even seen my team play in a Super Bowl. I probably never will watch the Jets play in a Super Bowl, because they're a dysfunctional mess year in, year out. I'm a New York Mets fan. They won the World Series when I was 7. I had to beg my mom to stay up and let me watch the World Series that year. And I've watched them lose to the Yankees. Of all the teams to lose to, the New York Yankees, that was not only a punch in the gut, it was a kick somewhere else. I don't know, if I was a Mets fan and I watched them be up 3-0 in a series to win the World Series and lose, I could not imagine the pain. I think about the Super Bowl when the Atlanta Falcons were up late in the fourth quarter and they were up big and they blew that lead. I couldn't imagine. I've got friends who are from Atlanta. They're diehard Falcon fans. That franchise has never recovered from that. I just don't know if the Panthers and their fans will ever recover from what will transpire if they lose this game tonight. My observation was what I saw on social media, and Panther fans, they are setting themselves up for some serious, serious heartbreak.
Great observation.
You know, it's funny, because a lot of the initial sentiment after Game 6 from Panther fans, quite simply, is resignation, right? Like, I think a lot of Panthers fans just accept that this is going to happen. I think a lot of Panthers fans just accept that this is not going to go their way. They're going to lose in spectacular fashion, and it's something that they're going to have to wear as a fan of this team. And you know, that's going to come back around in hour number two when we dig into some of those burning questions, because I think for Florida, the first 10 minutes of the game tonight are incredibly important. They're huge in the outcome of this game, not so much for the Florida Panthers players, but for the fan base. You got to give them a reason to believe, because right now the belief isn't there with Florida and their fan base. And if you're a player, if you're Paul Maurice, if you're Sergei Bobrovsky, Sasha Barkov, Matthew Tkachuk, doesn't matter who, you got to give the fans a reason to check in early in this game. Otherwise, it's going to go exactly how the fans feel it's going to go. We're going to take a break, come back with more next on the VGK Insider Show.
We're back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM.
VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Monday. Game 7 Stanley Cup Final is just around the corner, probably about 50 minutes or so from puck drop. We're going to get into offside review here in just a moment, but Chris Chapman brought to my attention, by way of Elliot Friedman, that Alanis Morissette, the famously Canadian singer Alanis Morissette, will be singing the national anthem today in Florida for the Panthers. It's a tad, as you said, it's a tad ironic, which is apropos considering we're talking about Alanis Morissette. Well done on the joke there, Chappie. But I looked, she's from Ottawa, And as we've talked about before, the Edmonton Oilers are not Canada's team. So perhaps bringing Alanis Morissette in to sing the anthem is trying to put, I don't know, a little bit of that loser energy that you generally get from Ottawa onto the Edmonton Oilers. Maybe that's just a way to change the momentum for the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, I don't know what the reasoning is behind bringing in Alanis Morissette to sing the national anthem on game seven.
Yeah.
You know, like you, hey, listen, you know what? Teach your own. Maybe you're trying some reverse mojo or juju or whatever you call it. And you know, maybe the Florida Panthers are telling the Edmonton Oilers, you ought to know that we're not afraid of you being Canadian. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe their hands are in their pocket. I have no idea, Ryan. Like, I don't know. Can I come up with any more Alanis Morissette songs?
You could try.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's no cross-eyed bear or anything, but it is what it is.
I mean, listen, she's no Jack Johnson, but she's close.
You ought to know this is going to be fodder for everybody.
Yes.
When it comes to the Stanley Cup final. Here's what I don't understand. And I don't know, like, I've been pretty tuned in, I think, to the majority of the Florida Panthers and their playoff run. Why is Ariana Grande not sang the anthem for the Florida Panthers?
Well, like, you have, like, Flo Rida.
No, hold on. There's a reason that I bring her up specifically. She was hit by a puck when she was a kid at a Panthers game.
Oh.
It's like a famous story that she was a Panthers fan growing up in the area. Like, she went to Panthers games way before it was a cool thing to do. And she's this gigantic star. It's game seven for a chance to win the Stanley Cup. Like, call in Ariana and have her sing the anthem.
Yeah. One thing I will give a ton of credit to the Golden Knights.
Mm-hmm.
We know Golden Pipes is awesome, but I can only think of one occasion, and it was Paul Schaefer from the Tonight Show fame, who sang the national anthem. I don't know why I remember it was against the Nashville Predators. I don't know why I remember that. But for 7 years, it's been Golden Pipes, and it's been Lene Myers when Golden Pipes can't sing. So for Florida, I don't know if they have a normal... Like, remember Dennis K. Morgan was the big guy for the Nashville Predators, and then they replaced him? Like...
Why do you know that name?
Because it's Dennis K. Morgan. How do you forget? Yeah. Now, the name I want to remember.
Hold on. Dennis K. Morgan was the guy that was, like, really angry that Carrie Underwood got to sing the anthem.
Yes, and he should have been. He got bumped. He got upstaged.
No, come on. It's Carrie Underwood. She's married to Mike Fisher. You're like, come on. What are we doing here? You're Dennis K. Morgan. You get bumped for that. Like, I'm just saying, listen, I don't know. I don't know if Alanis is just singing the Canadian national anthem. I don't know if she's going to sing both national anthems. It would be a really interesting development if you've got Alanis Morissette for the Canadian anthem, and then Ariana Grande comes out and she's like, hey, I'm going to do it. I'm going to sing it. I'm going to be the good luck charm, just like Shania Twain was for the Edmonton Oilers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying.
Shania, is she from is she from Edmonton?
I don't know if she's from Edmonton, but she's Canadian. Well, I feel like Canada unites for pretty much everything except for when a Canadian team is in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
Truthfully.
By the way, she's from, like, Windsor, so she's from Ontario.
Okay, so, like, here's the thing.
So absolutely
nobody in Calgary is rooting for the Edmonton Oilers tonight.
Yeah, they're as bad as Panther fans. They're going to feel that heartbreak.
Absolutely nobody in Vancouver is rooting for the Edmonton Oilers.
No.
None. So, like, I think when you are dealing with, like, Canadian singers, yeah, cool. Like, everybody's for Canada. Like, awesome. But when you're talking about winning a Stanley Cup, it's not – the Oilers are not Canada's team. We've discussed this. We've gone over this. It's just not the case. Now, before we get – too far out of the pocket here, which I'm afraid we already are, going down the Alanis Morissette rabbit hole. But anyway,
thank you.
The offside review in game six was an interesting one. Okay, so Sasha Barkov, it appeared early on in the second period after Adam Henrique scored to make it 2-0, it appeared that Barkov got the Panthers on the board. It would have been a huge goal in the context of the game. However, Chris Knobloch, he challenged the play, was offside. On review, Sam Reinhart appears to go into the zone before Barkov moves the puck completely over the blue line. And in the moment, we didn't get the stills that we've had over the last couple of days that kind of confirmed that the call was correct. So in the moment, it felt like the call, the goal, was taken off the board without conclusive evidence. I know you wanted to dig into this, Chapman, so I'm going to hand it off to you. You have your moment. You say your piece on what you thought about this specific review.
Well, it came to me because I saw a tweet from Dave Jackson, who, of course, is the rules guy on ESPN, former NHL referee. And his tweet was, two still shots of the puck still in contact with the blue line while teammate's skate fully breaks the plane. When enhanced and enlarged on an HD monitor, it is conclusive. Second pick, you can only see part of the puck below the heel of the stick. He followed it up by replying to someone saying he's not defending the rule, just showing that the correct decision was rendered based on the parameters. I wish there was a way to only review egregious plays. So it got me thinking, because Paul Maurice's comments post-game, and unfortunately we can't play them, but he basically said that he would not have challenged it if the roles were reversed, because he did not have the access to the video that the people who reviewed the play had access to. So that brings up my point of, if the coaching staff does not have the ability to review it with the depth and with the amount of time that is allotted to the referees and the people in Toronto who are involved in these things, then the goal or the replay, then it's either it should be available for everybody or it should be available for nobody. To me, I always harken back to soccer. They have what they call video assistant referee, VAR. It's the subject of a lot of controversy, especially in England, because the guys tend to take so much time, and especially on offside calls, what's offside, what's not offside, they get it wrong a lot. But the spirit of the rule is clear and obvious. There's nothing clear and there's nothing obvious about those enhanced HD graphics that Dave Jackson was able to post. Paul Maurice didn't have the ability to go frame by frame, Chris Knobloch, who got it right, he probably took a gamble, and obviously it was because it was that close, but his video assistant doesn't have the ability to enhance. He can only look at it very quickly and say, challenge, don't challenge. Like, to me, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, so there's a couple of reasons why I believe Chris Knobloch was quick to go with that challenge. The Edmonton Oilers have only allowed 4 power play goals against in the entire postseason.
So it wasn't much of a gamble.
For Knobloch? Yeah, for Knobloch, it's not a gamble, because you just accept and you assume that your guys will bail you out if you're wrong. If that goal stands, it's a completely different game. If that goal comes off the board, then I think you're feeling pretty good about yourself. And even in those situations, I do look at it and say Knobloch challenges because A, he thinks it's offside, and B, because if he's wrong, he's got essentially a sure thing on the penalty kill to bail him out if he's wrong.
There was no risk. You know, like a lot of times, I mean, you think about teams that maybe don't have a great penalty kill. They're not challenging that. Like if Edmonton's PK was Edmonton's PK from years past, they probably don't challenge that. But because it was that close, like there's no way the video referee or video coach could have looked at that and known watching that play was offside. It was a gamble, but it really wasn't much of a gamble because, like you mentioned, their PK had been unbeatable in these playoffs. Like, to me, I think the spirit of the rule needs to be the focus here, clear and obvious. And I'm all for getting it right. Like, I want you to get it right, but there's a fine line between getting it right and, I think, completely changing the way the game is played and completely getting away from the spirit of the rule. I know it benefited the Golden Knights earlier in the season, towards the end of the season, they had a challenge, and it was unbelievably close, and they got it right. But to me, if you have to enhance a video to the point where you are zoomed in, where the only thing you can see is the blade of the skate in the blue line, we're doing it wrong. I think we're doing it wrong. And why on earth is there no camera at the blue line? Like, why is everything on an angle?
So here's the thing that you have to realize when it comes to the review. I agree with you. The spirit of the rule is not to take back a play like we had in game six. I really don't believe that that's the case. However, if you are going into and entering the conversation of the spirit of the rule is to get the call right. And as much as we can sit here and say, if you've got to zoom in, if you've got to pixelate it, if you've got to take, 10 minutes to determine whether or not he was off by a skate blade, then it's not in the spirit of the rule, but it is the right call. And I think that's what Dave Jackson was saying, right? Like, he wishes that you could just throw out these moments, these scenarios, where it's by the slimmest of margins so that you can only get the ones that are egregious. But the problem is, when it comes to review, it's all or nothing. Now, here's how you change it. Here's how you fix it. If you cannot come to a conclusion within 90 seconds of review, then it's done. It's done, like, flat out done. If you cannot come to a conclusive decision within 90 seconds, then the call stands. That's how I think it should move. It should be moving forward.
Yeah, it needs to be sped up. And I think you get away from the spirit of the rule when you have the capability. Like, if Chris Knobloch and Paul Maurice don't have the ability to zoom in like that to where they're pretty confident, then I don't think it's fair. Like, I don't think it's fair that the referees should have to watch it in full speed. I don't agree in slowing it down to a frame-by-frame situation. Like, watch that play in full speed, and that goal stands. If they watch it in full speed, it's a goal.
I agree with you completely, but the problem is, if you are going to allow review for the egregious ones, you're going to get ones like this that are called back that really, truly shouldn't be. Let's take a break. Come back with more on the VGK Insider Show. Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show is coming up in just a couple of minutes. We're going to get into burning questions for Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. We'll also hit one-timers, news, and notes from around the National Hockey League, and we have a trade to announce that involves Linus Ullmark, the Ottawa Senators, and an underwhelming return to the Boston Bruins. I'll tell you, I had to, triple verify the trade because it didn't seem right to me. Linus Ullmark is one of the better goaltenders in the game right now. You would think that, considering what some goaltenders have gone for already, that there'd be a pretty big shift for the Boston Bruins here. Not really the case. We'll dig into that in one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League coming in hour number two. Also, Chris Chapman believes that this game tonight is going to be a blowout in favor of the Edmonton Oilers. Telling you right now, this one's got overtime written all over it. It is not going to be an easy night for either Edmonton or Florida. Hour number two, that's coming up next. Keep it here on the VGK Insider Show.